Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest right now is Bill Federer. We're going to talk about the elections and what role faith may have played in that. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you, Jerry.
Sure. Okay, so what is your overall comment in terms of faith in the recent elections?
I think it was critical. Several different groups have been trying to educate pastors. One is David Lane with the American Renewal Project, Tony Perkins and others. In America, we're a republic. What's a republic? A republic is the people are king ruling through their representatives. And so when somebody dishonors the flag, what they're saying is, I don't want to be the king anymore. And so pastors are, in a sense, counselors to the king. So 70-plus percent of Americans identify themselves as Christians. That's 70%. That's a majority. And so the pastors are speaking to the king every Sunday. And you have one set of pastors that say, stay asleep, and the other comes in and throws a bucket of ice water on his congregation and says, wake up. You don't just have the right to vote in America. You're going to be held accountable to God for what happens. You're the king. And so these different groups have been waking up pastors who have been waking up their congregations to realize that we need to get involved. And we're sort of like the Gulliver's Travels with the little Lilliputians trying to tie Gulliver down. We're starting to wake up and realize that we have not just a right, but a responsibility for this great country. And I think it did have a major effect in the election.
All right, I want to read you two statistics, one at a time. Okay, first is this. White, born-again, evangelical Christian. This is, by the way, according to the respected Pew Research. White, born-again, evangelical Christian. In the 2016 election, 81% of those people voted for Trump and 16% for Hillary Clinton. Let's first deal with that statistic. So 81% of the evangelicals came out for Trump.
Well, the reason that's important is because Hillary and the left has actually declared war on Christianity. And we've seen this, that the LGBT agenda is simply a creative way to declare war on Christian values. And if that particular behavior is not a sin, arguably there are no sins. If there's no sins, you don't need a savior. We tell kids, well, gee, there's a creator and you're made in God's image. Well, if there is a God, he's so messed up, he's put in men and women's bodies and you have to do operations to fix it. One of the first things in the Bible, it says God made Adam and then Eve, right? Male and female, and the man shall leave the father and mother, cleave to his wife. This predates the church. I mean, this is like so fundamental.
The family.
Every living animal you see on the planet, it's male, female, and offspring. And for them to want to attack this and try to change it, it's a attack at the very core of Western civilization values. But we look at Europe, and we see that it's gone from separating from the Judeo-Christian values. Then it enters into this secular, amoral, LGBT agenda neutral, but now Europe's entering an Islamic future. So we're really seeing that all the gay agenda is, in its effect, is a creative way to transition from the Judeo-Christian past into the Muslim future. And we look at the schools. We've gone from prayer in the schools and Bible reading in the schools to condoms in the schools, right, the free sex. And now we're seeing Islam coming in with major textbook companies having all these chapters on the five pillars of Islam and how Gulen, this Muslim billionaire, has been setting up charter schools around the country and teaching Islam. And then we look at the military. It's gone from Franklin Roosevelt passing out Gideon's New Testament in the military, to Clinton's don't ask, don't tell if you're a homosexual, to Harry Reid, now you can serve openly, to now if you don't embrace the homosexual agenda, you are chased out of the military. And now we see Islam coming in with President Obama having put Muslim Brotherhood-connected people in the very top positions in the Pentagon, the CIA, the FBI, the Homeland Security, the Department of Justice. List goes on and on. Huma Abedin, right, for 20 years, right-hand person to Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State. And with her help, Hillary was getting hundreds of millions of dollars of donations from Muslim sheikhs to her Clinton Foundation. So we see that there's a transition. There's nothing static. Everything's moving. And so Western civilization has been moving from a Judeo-Christian past into a secular, free sex, gay neutral, and now Europe and the Western civilization moving into a Islamic future. With this election, I think a lot of Christians are beginning to wake up and realize that a lot more is at stake than just business as usual. When they begin to have LGBT mayors like Houston wanting to censor all the pastors of the sermons, when they're wanting to come into the Christian schools and churches in Massachusetts and say, well, if you have any church event that's open to the public, then your church has to comply with public accommodation for transsexuals. And so they're wanting to say, okay, you got to refit your church building and don't say anything that offends them. Their goal is the church. They want to silence that voice because it's the, once you get rid of the concept of a creator, then you don't have any other rights other than what the government gives.
Well, what's interesting though about this is I think enough evangelical Christians rallied around Trump for all of his flaws. They rallied around him even in greater ways than they did for George W. Bush in 2004, percentage-wise. It's not much, but 78% of evangelicals, that same group, white, born-again, evangelical Christians, 78% voted for George W. Bush in 2004, 74% voted for McCain in 2008, 78%, back to that number, voted for Romney in 2012, and then again, 81% voted for Trump. But now let's talk about the Catholics, because Catholics, you could divide the Catholics, and in fact, Pew Research does in its research here, white Catholic versus Hispanic Catholic, and then there's the overall. Okay, so here are the statistics from Pew Research, and I'll have you comment on this, okay, because this is very important. Okay, white Catholics voted for Trump 60% versus Hillary 37%. Hispanic Catholics, it's almost the exact opposite, 26% only voted for Trump, 67% voted for Hillary. But average them out, and you end up with a net this way. The 52% of Catholics voted for Trump, 45% voted for Hillary. Certainly not the same majority as we saw with the white evangelicals, but still a majority for Trump and not for Hillary. Okay, your comments about Catholics.
Well, I think there is a awakening going on there as well. And when you have the Little Sisters of the Poor, I mean, they have taken vows of chastity, and the Obama administration forcing them to fund abortion and contraceptives and suing them. The federal government suing some nuns. Something is wrong, and there isn't people waking up within the Catholic Church saying, wait a second. And then we see...
Let me stop. The vice president nominee, you know, under Hillary was an active Catholic.
Right, Nancy Pelosi. I mean, you have lots of what would be considered Catholics that really don't believe. It's just a nominal thing for them.
Okay, and I'm not defending Tim Kaine. I mean, Tim Kaine at least would say abortion is wrong. Nancy Pelosi seems like, you know, there's nothing even wrong about abortion. But, of course, Tim Kaine's position was still the classic, so quote-unquote, pro-choice position. It's still pro-abortion rights. So, in other words, personally, I think abortion is wrong. But let's go ahead and have it legal. Well, wait a minute, Tim. If it's wrong, then isn't it wrong? So, anyway, your comments.
Well, that division mentally started with John F. Kennedy. For the longest time, it was whatever you believe in your personal life is what you believe in your public life. And it was Kennedy who gave a speech to the Houston Baptist Association saying, look, I'm a Catholic, but I'm not going to let it influence my politics. And so the Pope won't tell me how to run America. Well, they buy it and vote for him. But it came up with this idea that I can hold some views personally, but I'm not going to let them affect me publicly. That was a John F. Kennedy introduction into a political affair. So you could begin to have these policies. Well, personally, I'm against abortion, but that's not the way it's supposed to be. Whatever you are personally, that's what the voters are voting in for you to have enough conviction to stay with. Also, Saul Alinsky. Here he is, getting funding from the Catholic Church back in the 1960s and 70s. And
that's a scandal.
And so a lot of the offerings they would take up at the churches, they would funnel to these groups. Oh, well, he's wanting to organize in the communities. And there was this naivety And then some using. I actually talked to someone that was a part of it. They said they took her to Loyola University, and they would be taught how to tear the system down. She says, it never occurred to me what they were going to put in its place. Mm-hmm. But now we have Catholics waking up saying, wait a second, we've been used. We've been duped by these liberal groups that have been coming in, trying to take our money, trying to... Solinsky's book talks about, he said, if I would go into these Polish Catholic communities and told them I was pro-abortion, they'd have run me out of town. But he says that I would work with them in their community organizations, and I'd develop relationships with them. And then finally, when they realized where I was standing for, they said, well, we know him, so we won't chase him out. And so he says churches do this in reverse. They'll have, you know, a concert or something, and they'll invite the community in, and they'll develop relationships, and they gradually pull them toward the gospel. So basically, a community organizer is the opposite of a pastor.
Mm.
But it's just organizing for political gain for some politician. But again, there's been an awakening that the Catholics are realizing, wait a second, we're not going to fund any more liberal, the social
justice
groups that want to cause these crises to stir up. Unfortunately, we have George Soros now taking the place of funding these groups. George Soros funded more Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. They were the ones that organized the riots in Missouri. And so these groups, these riots we're seeing across America, they're not riots of people. They're riots of people being funded by George Soros. So basically we're seeing George Soros rioting. And the people that are doing it, Lenin referred to them as useful idiots,
yeah.
People that believed the naive propaganda, but they're just being pawns in a bigger picture. And it's this whole socialist idea of creating really bad crises, and it's an excuse for martial law and some dictator to take over.
Hmm. Well, Bill, it seems to me, though, overall the statistics are such that it was the Christians who made the difference in this particular election. And by the way, there are certainly many, you were saying earlier, 70% of the people claim to be Christians. But one last statistic I'll ask you about this, and I'll just speak in the generalities. The Pew Research found that if you attended church on a regular basis, you were far more likely to vote for Trump versus if you profess to be Christian, but you just basically never go to church. You're coming.
Right. I think in a similar statistic, David Barton and the Gallup polls did, where they could ask one question, and I think it was the pro-life question. He says, based on the answer to that, I can describe 20 things about you. So he says, if you ask somebody, are you pro-life? And then they begin to hem-haw and say, well, you know, he says, the moment they say that, he says, I can tell you 20 things. They're
probably
going to be in favor of...
I want to find that research. Yeah, I like that. That's excellent.
Second Amendment.
Okay. So in other words, that one question uncovers all the others. You know, that makes so much sense, because I've often thought in my mind that if you don't get the issue of abortion right, what else don't you get right as a politician? I mean, it's a non-negotiable. Life is a non-negotiable, you know? You can have all the rights in the world, but if you're dead, how can you enjoy them? Hello?
Well, and I was with Alan Keyes a while back, and he said how the Constitution preamble says to secure to ourselves and our posterity the blessings of, you know, liberty. Well, posterity, what's that? Future generations.
Right.
Well, if you're going to care about the future generations, you're going to care about what's in the womb.
Right.
And so we're guaranteeing these rights to the children in the womb.
Excellent.
And so when Hillary can stand in front and say, well, the child in the womb has no rights, it's not recognized as a legal person, it's like, wait a second, it says to ourselves and our posterity we're wanting to. And so,
you're absolutely right. We're out of time, but I thank you so much for joining us. And I think the lesson of this lesson is if we show up, if the values voters show up, we make all the difference. Thank you. AmericanMinute.com for more information. Bill, appreciate you and all your great work. God bless you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, bye-bye.